initially when they arrived on scene, it was the wreckage of the aircraft that was burning and the any residual fuel from the aircraft.
A fatal plane crash in downtown Anchorage. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, December 29th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, high winds stop the ferry Tustamina.
There are hurricane-force winds forecast between Homer and Kodiak Island.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Did you know the average cost of a DUI in Alaska is over $24,000? Each December, there is a spike in impaired driving-related accidents. Consider the real costs of driving impaired. It could result in the loss of your hard-earned money, your job, or worse, you could lose your life. The Alaska Highway Safety Office reminds you to drive sober or get pulled over. This message sponsored by the Alaska Highway Safety Office.
An airplane crashed into an office building in downtown Anchorage early this morning. As KSKA's Zachariah Hughes reports, serious questions remain about what caused the crash and why the pilot was flying at all.
At about 6:18 a.m., a low-flying Cessna 172 heading in the direction of a nearby airfield struck the corner of the Brady Building on 3rd Avenue and L Street. Investigators with the National Transportation Safety Board say the sole occupant on board, Doug Demarest, died in the crash. No one in the building or on the street was injured. Alex Boyd is an assistant chief with the Anchorage Fire Department, which arrived on scene to secure the crash site, assist NTSB, and put out the resulting blaze.
Initially, when they arrived on scene, it was the wreckage of the aircraft that was burning and any residual fuel from the aircraft. Fire was fairly easy to control initially. Did not involve the building or any of the surrounding area.
By midday, an official with the Federal Bureau of Investigation put out a release saying there is no structural damage to either of the buildings affected by the crash. Stacey Fager-Pellessier is a spokesperson for the FBI in Anchorage and says it's not uncommon for the Bureau to partner with NTSB when there's an aviation incident.
But I always get concerned because I know that people's first thought may be they hear FBI and think this was terrorist-related. And I can say unequivocally, we do not believe that this was related to terrorists.
Laying four stories beneath a large gash in the building's corner, surrounded by broken glass, was a crumpled red wing from the small plane. Written on it were the letters CAP, for Civil Air Patrol, a civilian group that helps with search and rescue missions across the country. The pilot who died joined the Alaska chapter in 2010. NTSB investigator Clint Johnson describes CAP as the lifeblood of search and rescue efforts, but it was unclear why Demarest was flying the plane in the dark during gusty weather and without a flight plan on file.
At this point right now, it doesn't sound like this was a sanctioned flight for CAP.
CAP did confirm that Demarest was not authorized to fly the plane Tuesday morning. NTSB's investigation into what caused the crash is ongoing. As of Tuesday afternoon, officials could not confirm the plane's path prior to the accident. A source close with Demarest confirms that his wife, attorney Catherine Demarest, is an attorney for Dorsey & Whitney LLP in the same building struck by the plane. Officials are not yet able to say whether the crash was deliberate or accidental. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Last night, a four-year-old died in a state trooper housing unit in Bethel. After an investigation earlier today, officials believe the child was playing by himself in the living room when he got a hold of a handgun and fatally shot himself. The gun was privately owned, according to a trooper dispatch. Trooper spokesman Tim Despain says there were two adults and two other children in the home, but based on a preliminary investigation, no one was in the room when the gun went off. The dispatch says the next of kin was on the scene when the incident happened. Trooper spokeswoman Megan Peters says a request has been made to send the child's body to the state medical examiner's office for autopsy. Peters says the child's father is a state trooper and wasn't home at the time of the shooting. Forecasts calling for continued high winds in south-central Alaska have forced cancellation of the state ferry Tustamina's sailing between Homer and Kodiak. Jeremy Woodrow is a spokesman for the Department of Transportation.
There are hurricane force winds forecast between Homer and Kodiak Island. Therefore, the Alaska Marine Highway System has opted to cancel those sailings on the MV Tustamina.
The Tuesday and Wednesday sailings between the two cities are on hold for now. A persistent low-pressure system is bringing the big winds to the Gulf of Alaska coastal areas.
The forecast is calling for over 70-knot winds and seas upwards of 26, 27 feet. And those are above the limits that we choose to sail the Tustamina, and that's for safety of passengers and for being able to secure cargo on the ship.
The Tustamina is expected to sail to Kodiak Thursday. The ferry will still sail as scheduled between Homer and Saldovia. Woodrow says Southeast ferries are sailing as scheduled. High wind warnings go into effect tonight for Kenai Peninsula cities, Kachemak Bay, Bristol Bay, and Anchorage and Eklutna. The National Weather Service predicts winds of 60 miles an hour and gusts to 75 starting around midnight in Kachemak Bay. The wind should dissipate Wednesday afternoon. Anchorage's lower hillside area, East Anchorage, Turnagain Arm, and higher elevations around the city are under a high wind warning starting at 9 this evening. Southeast winds are up to 90 miles an hour and gusts of 100 miles an hour are expected to rock Turnagain Arm and higher elevations. East Anchorage winds are expected to reach 50 to 70 miles per hour. The western Prince William Sound communities of Seward, Portage, Whittier, and Girdwood are under high wind warnings between 1 a.m. and 11 a.m. tomorrow. Winds of 60 to 80 miles an hour are expected. Bristol Bay communities of Naknek, King Salmon, and Dillingham are also under high wind warnings starting at 9 tonight through Wednesday, with potential gusts reaching 100 miles an hour. Strongest winds are predicted for the Western Capes and North Bristol Bay coast. High winds are triggering power outages in Fairbanks. Golden Valley Electric Association saw multiple areas west of Fairbanks out of power yesterday, and as KUAC's Robert Hannon reports, the company is braced for further power loss.
Early Monday, a Chinook wind drove temperatures up around Fairbanks. GVA's Corrine Bradish says warmer conditions triggered a series of small outages across western Fairbanks.
The warm temperatures warming up the snow that might be on trees and power lines, and it's just offloading, and when that happens, sometimes that causes outages.
Bradish says three crews worked to clear trees and restore power, but she says the utility is also braced for more outages, as record high winds are expected to continue in the next few days. Bradish says GVA's call center is prepared to field expected reports.
That way we can send the appropriate equipment and crews down to where the outages are and make repairs if needed.
GVEA will post information on outage causes and responses at its Facebook page, and Bradish urges people to review information on the utility's website on preparing for outages. In Fairbanks, I'm Robert Hannon.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a basketball tournament uniquely Alaskan.
We have some dance and music performance groups that are coming in each night between the showcase games.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 directory for older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
The state of Alaska has been granted an extension until October 2016 to meet the requirements of the federal Real ID Act. APRN's Josh Edge reports.
The Real ID Act requires that state IDs and driver's licenses come into compliance with federal standards in order to do things like fly or enter federal buildings. Leslie Rydell is deputy commissioner for the State Department of Administration.
It's status quo for now. People are fine with what they have, and that people shouldn't panic, you know, about their IDs and their driver's license. They are good to travel right now. And they will be through October of 2016 at a minimum.
Currently, Alaska does not meet certain aspects of the law, and that's unlikely to change due to a state statute prohibiting the use of state assets solely to come into compliance with the Real ID Act. For instance, the inclusion of a Homeland Security-approved security mark is unlikely to be covered by state funding unless the statute is changed. Rydell says some of the state's processes are already up to the federal standards.
That has allowed them to give us the extension, but I'm not sure if after this year we'll have to see if we can continue to meet their qualifications to at least get an extension.
The state is planning on filing for another extension, but until then, Alaska IDs and driver's licenses will work just fine through at least October 2016. In Anchorage, I'm Josh Edge.
The Board of Fisheries' new Coastal Change Committee will hold its first meeting next month. The committee is helping the board develop some guidelines for how it deals with commercial fishing boundaries that change along with Alaska's coastline. KDLG's Molly Dishner has more.
The board created the committee at its Bristol Bay meeting earlier this month after considering proposals that ask for boundary lines to be redrawn or set net sites otherwise changed due to erosion or other environmental issues. Glenn Haight is the board's executive director.
The committee was set up to help develop criteria that the board can use when it's dealing with proposals that are impacted by coastal erosion. And so really, it's not unlike any other list of criteria the board may look at when it deliberates on certain proposals. You know, they have the allocation criteria and the sustainable salmon criteria that they follow when they're dealing with those types of proposals. So this would be similar to that.
Haight says this first meeting will mostly be for scoping.
The committee needs to wrap its arms around all the aspects that affect these kinds of decisions, you know, whether they're related to DNR issues, legal issues, enforcement issues, people's historical use patterns, and things that are happening because of the coastal erosion. They need to put their arms around all of that and try to develop criteria.
Board members Reed Mariski and Robert Mumford are on the committee, and there will also be representatives from the State Departments of Public Safety, Law, and Natural Resources. The meeting is scheduled for January 4th. There will be call-in sites in Dillingham, King Salmon, Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Juneau. Individuals can also testify by teleconference, but the deadline to sign up to do that is Saturday, January 2nd. The committee is also taking written comments through January 2nd. In Dillingham, I'm Molly Dishner.
High school basketball teams and fans are gathering in Anchorage this week. Six teams are competing at the new Rally the Regions 2A basketball tournament. Organizer Heath Day says the tournament was put together to give teams a chance to play each other before the state tournament in region.
We put this together to give teams from areas of the state, from all across the state, a chance to play each other in more common ground in terms of coming to Anchorage. And instead of having to fly through Anchorage to get back out to each other.
Teams from Bristol Bay, Hooper Bay, Unalakleet, Wrangell, and Selawik are competing. Day says the tournament is also a chance to spotlight different cultures.
So we have some dance and music performance groups that are coming in each night between the showcase games.
The tournament was organized by the Alaska Fellowship of Christian Athletes and is being held at Grace Christian Church in Anchorage.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations in communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com.
UAS School of Management offers Bachelor of Business Administration degree programs online where learning critical information, new technologies, and tools are part of the course. More at uas.alaska.edu. This message sponsored by UAS.
A Homer business owner wants to use a drone to take pictures and shoot video of properties in Homer. But restrictions on drone piloting are hampering his chances of making the business work. KBBI's Quinton Chandler has more.
Ash Churchill owns a quadcopter. It's an unmanned aerial vehicle, or a drone. He flies it as a hobby regularly, and that is perfectly legal.
It is probably about a square foot, has four blades, single battery, lasts about 20 minutes. It carries a standard GoPro camera, and the camera is connected to the drone via what they call a gimbal.
The gimbal holds the camera steady in flight. Churchill wants to use the drone in his new photography business. That is illegal.
About a year and a half ago, when my wife and I were looking for a property to purchase in Homer, and just looking on the internet at hundreds and hundreds of properties, realized the extremely low quality of property photos in general.
Churchill is nursing a coffee in the corner of a local coffee shop. He is an Australian native, and his business is called AC Productions. The FAA is developing federal regulations for drones in states across the country right now. Some of the concerns are safety and privacy. Churchill started his one-man operation this summer. His plan was to sell aerial photographs and video of properties around Kachemak Bay to real estate companies. He already had an interest in photography and real estate.
That, in correlation with the properties around Homer, being very hard to get to sometimes, especially the vacant land, and also bluff properties and things like that, combined with the drone capabilities, I just saw a niche market that couldn't be ignored.
Churchill hasn't been able to follow through with his idea, though. To fly a drone commercially, the pilot has to get a special exemption. Federal regulations on drone piloting are murky. Federal agencies insist they're working on safely introducing drones into the country's airspace, but it's taking longer than drone pilots like Churchill would like. Alan Knitzer with the Federal Aviation Administration said in a written statement that the FAA has made important steps toward a 2012 congressional order that the agency bring drone use under rule of law by this past September. The FAA missed that deadline, but Knitzer says they are finalizing a set of rules that are scheduled to be published this spring. There's also a new database the agency requires drone pilots register to by February 19th, and they've approved 3,000 commercial exemptions to businesses. That's the same exemption Churchill needs. He also has to pay to get a special pilot's license.
The drone that I fly at the moment retails for around about $1,000. If the regulations go in the direction they look to be going, it's going to cost you around about $5,000, from my understanding, purely just to be able to fly it. That's before even purchasing it.
Churchill says the cost and restrictions are pushing him towards giving up on his drone and just relying on still photography and videos taken from the ground. And he says that's what the FAA probably wants.
I think what's brought about these regulations in such a hurry is to try and slow down the amount of drones being sold, being used in general, and also because of the severity of the implications of somebody misusing these drones.
Churchill also believes drone pilots' rights aren't being considered. As an example, he criticizes the FAA's plan to make the names and addresses of drone pilots who register with the agency public.
Sure, I'm all for having regulations, guidelines. I am in the opinion that the regulations and restrictions are, at this point, borderline ridiculous.
Churchill is a month away from taking his citizenship exam, and he'd like to begin using his drone in his business as soon as possible. But he's not sure if the cost and hassle are worth it. FAA's Alan Knitzer said in his statement, film and video production are among the drone uses the FAA approved for commercial exemptions. In Homer, I'm Quentin Chandler.
Federal scientists will begin using drones to monitor beluga whales in Cook Inlet as part of an effort to restore the endangered animals. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration will use the unmanned aircraft to gather more information on belugas that have stranded. NOAA biologist Barbara Mahoney says the drones will provide details that aren't available from a horizontal perspective. She says the additional information could be crucial to determining a whale's chance of survival. Scientists tested the drones in August on a pair of stranded belugas on a mudflat in the Turnagain Arm. Mahoney says the drone produced quality images. Cook Inlet is home to about 340 belugas. Die-offs of common MERS have been taking place across Alaska since the summer, and the latest report is from Kechemak Bay, according to biologists with the Alaska Maritime National Wildlife Refuge in Homer. KBBI's Daisha Eaton has the story.
Leslie Slater, a wildlife biologist with the Alaska Maritime National Wildlife Refuge in Homer, says there have been two waves of mortality.
This die-off started to be noticed around mid-July in certain parts of the state, and so it continued at some level, a fairly high noticeable level, for a couple of weeks, and then it seemed to diminish, and then there seemed to be a resurgence again of the number of carcasses that were seen on beaches, and that happened about in mid-November or so.
There have been die-offs reported of the penguin-like seabirds in Cold Bay in July and in Kodiak in November. Slater says they've also had reports from Seward, Sitka, and Prince William Sound. In November, starving and dead MERS turned up around the Mat-Su and Anchorage areas farther inland than usual.
It seems that then they would either be disoriented, which could be the result of ingesting a toxin, or they could be very desperate in searching for food and just, you know, kept traveling up the inlet.
Seabird die-offs have been recorded all along the west coast of the U.S. in Washington, Oregon, and California this year. Slater estimates that a large number of MERS have died around Kachemak Bay.
Based on the duration of the time that we've had carcasses being reported to us, I would say it's into the thousands, certainly throughout Kachemak Bay.
The dead MERS are being counted by citizen scientists all along the spit and along the beach up to Anchor Point.
They've been doing this for several years, and so there's been a baseline established of what we would consider sort of a normal winter. And so far, it's been at least six times the normal background amount that have been observed.
Slater says the citizen scientists mark the MERS with color-coded zip ties around a wing or foot. And if you see a bird with a zip tie, she says you shouldn't disturb it because it's part of a study. And anecdotal reports of dead MERS and other birds are coming in from across the bay. They've also had reports of some dead tufted puffins, horned puffins, and an ancient merlet. She says the birds, along with the MERS, feed on small fish or dive to get invertebrates during summer and dive for squid, crustaceans, and krill during winter. Slater says MER carcasses were sent to the National Wildlife Health Center in Madison, Wisconsin, where bird flu was ruled out. The dead birds seem to have starved, but Slater says there could be other factors.
There are analyses that are pending, so it could be, you know, something that had to do with PSP, like a paralytic shellfish poisoning toxin that was ingested at some point, but that is still unknown.
Results from those tests should be back in January. That's also when biologist Heather Renner with the Alaska Maritime National Wildlife Refuge will be presenting a paper on the MER die-off at the Alaska Marine Science Symposium in Anchorage. In Homer, I'm Daisha Eaton.
More than 30,000 Alaska residents were called for jury duty last year. Were you one of them? The state court system relies on a steady stream of jurors to fairly try cases across the state. A jury management committee, including judges and court administrators, is currently examining ways to improve the overall jury selection process and to contain rising costs. Superior Court Judge Michael McDonald is the presiding judge for the 4th Judicial District in Fairbanks. Judge McDonald says our legal duty as jurors is important. He says even people who want to get out of jury duty often change their minds.
I think almost without exception, you see that people have a very good experience about being on the jury, and we have surveys that we send out and get comments from people, and the comments are just remarkable in how satisfying it was and how appreciative they were of the whole process and how they enjoyed it.
Is the court system doing anything to improve and streamline the process? It can take a lot of time for people to just be dismissed from jury duty.
Well, the court system has changed the qualification process. We just went to an online qualification system where you can, go to the court system's website and fill out your questionnaire, and that saves a lot of time on the getting your postcards back and getting your questionnaire filled out. And then once we get folks into the courtroom, we're working on a system where we can, through push notifications to your cell phone and email communications, really shorten down the communication time and avoid any unnecessary trip.
What would you say to people who think they don't have time or they don't want to make time or their work is too important to step away from for jury duty? What would you say to them?
Well, I often get letters from jurors looking to be excused, and I will call them and speak with them. And to a person, they all want to be jurors, and they all appreciate the value of being a juror. And what I usually say to them is, what if you or a loved one had a dispute in front of the court? Wouldn't you want jurors like you on the panel?
How are people tapped in the first place? I've lived in Alaska for more than 15 years, and I haven't been called for jury duty. Why do you think that is?
Right. Yeah, well, you see that. And, you know, some folks are rarely called, and I know specifically of other jurors, and it seems like they get called, three times in the last 10 years, and it's just a matter of the random draw. In Alaska, we use the permanent fund dividend list as our juror list. So if you apply for an Alaska PFD, you are on the jury list, but then the random selection process works, and some people just seem to get their number called more than others.
Judge McDonald, what is unique about jury service in Alaska?
Well, what I see to be the most unique aspect of it is how different it is from region to region. And I think that, you know, we that live here in Fairbanks, or if you're in the Valley or Anchorage, you know, we do our thing, and we drive to court, we show up in the morning, and we're back to work by noontime. But if you're in Bethel, or if you're in the Southeast, and you're up in Nome, the jury pool is so small, and some of these sites have to do all the cases for the whole region. So if you're in jury duty in Bethel, you can find yourself on jury duty every other year, and you sit for a whole month, and you do two or three trials. And it's just heroic, and it's just admirable to see the kind of work that jurors do in the Southeast and in Bethel and up in Nome, Kotzebue area. And I think that's really special and unique. And even from the state's court system's perspective, where we fly jurors in from small communities in Bethel to make sure there's representation from these small villages on the jury pool. When we confer with jury commissioners from other states, they're just amazed at the idea of us flying jurors in from small communities to create that diverse pool. And I think we can be sort of proud of the commitment of the jurors and the court system to make these juries happen in these remote areas, despite, you know, pretty significant costs.
Michael McDonald is the presiding judge for the 4th Judicial District in Fairbanks. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Zachariah Hughes, Ellen Lockyer and Josh Edge in Anchorage, Quinton Chandler and Dasha Eaton in Homer, Lakeed Rashavis in Bethel, Robert Hannon in Fairbanks, and Molly Dishner in Dillingham. Our audio engineer and web editor is Monica Goki. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly.
Alaska Pacific University delivers a distinctive education grounded in real-world experience. Through their engaging staff and faculty, APU's education is designed to broaden and deepen their students' potential through action and understanding. Hashtag, this is our classroom. This message sponsored by APU. Did you know the average cost of a DUI in Alaska is over $24,000? Each December, there is a spike in impaired driving-related accidents. Consider the real costs of driving impaired. It could result in the loss of your hard-earned money, your job, or worse, you could lose your life. The Alaska Highway Safety Office reminds you to drive sober or get pulled over. This message sponsored by the Alaska Highway Safety Office.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.